everyone. Welcome back to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast. Your three usual hosts are here today. I'm Kate.
Oh, shit.
Well, we have to do this in order of importance. So who, between the two of you, who do you think is more important
it's
to the
so
show?
Funny because
probably Shruti.
Mike, don't just concede like that.
Yeah, I'm going to concede.
I mean, Mike does not edit the podcast. It's
fair.
Like a very easy... Anyway, let's just keep going from here. It's Mike and Shruti.
Yeah.
Okay, well, today's episode is about a show that I have continuously nagged Shruti and Mike about for over a year, and I'm very, very excited that we are covering it today.
It's the reason Kate is the most important person on the podcast this week.
for just this episode, I think. And then I go down in the ranking every other episode. but we are talking about Season 2 of the HBO Max show, Our Flag Means Death, created by David Jenkins and executive produced and sometimes directed by Taika Waititi.
Yay. What's that thing you said? HBO? What's HBO?
Oh, right. Sorry. Just Max.
I wasn't going to say anything.
But then Shruti said something. Yeah, it's fine. but yeah, I'm very excited to cover this show because, as you both know, and probably as some of our viewers may also know if I've talked to them about it, I love this show and it's my favorite show on television right now, and I just have so much love in my heart for it. And now I'm making my friends watch it and then review on it, and I'm so excited to see what you guys thought about this season. For people that aren't familiar with this show, really brief, it's a pirate comedy romance about Steed Bonnet, who is the gentleman pirate, and Blackbeard, who is obviously Blackbeard, and it's about them sailing together as pirates and them falling in love with each other, and that's kind of it. It's great. I watched this show when it came out last year. It was like last spring. So I waited over a year for season two. I'm curious when you guys watched season one.
Kate, you know when I watched season one.
I know, but just tell the people. I know.
Well, so here's the thing. Kate watched season one, what, 2 years ago? And then
last year.
So for the past around 365 days, I have been pestered to watch Our Flag Means Death. Sure that you would love it. Please. You know how much the show means to me. Why won't you just do it? I'm like, Kate, I would watch it for you. I will. I'll just watch it before season two comes out. And what did I do? I'm a woman of my word. If anything else, I'm a woman of my word. 1 month before season two came out, Kate and I got up together and we watched the first part of season one, and then we watched all of season two. And honestly, while I do love the show, I think what I love most about this show is how much Kate loves this show. We'll post a photo on our Instagram of us watching the season two premiere. Kate is literally like cowered over the television, like holding her hands together, watching Steed profess his love to Ed. And I just like snapped a photo. It was too good. Like, Kate's obsession over these characters and the way she like will aggressively hit pillows when like Ed and Steed kiss because she's so excited. Like, that is my favorite part of the show, is how much joy it brings Kate.
Good
Lord.
I'm
gonna cry a little. That was so sweet.
Sheesh. Well, you're gonna not like what I'm gonna say. Nothing. I like the show, but when I went to start season two the other week or so ago, I realized I never finished season one. Yeah.
Wait, that's so important though. It ended on a cliffhanger, Michael.
I know. I started season two and there was a recap and I was like, I don't remember half
what
of this stuff. Yeah, so I had to go back and check, and apparently I only watched like the first six episodes of season one, and then must have like forgotten about it, because I watched it when it came out a year ago and just never finished it. So I had to finish those episodes, and then I binged season two in a matter of a few days.
You'd think I'd be mad at you about that, but the amount of people who, when I tell about this show to them, they were like, oh yeah, I watched like the first three or four episodes of season one, and then I'm just like, and you didn't finish it? Like, what? And that's, like, a common thing. A lot of people seemed to have, like, watched half of season one and then stopped. And I'm not sure if it was because it was before it got to, like, what I think is the meaty part of the show, which is, like, Steed and Ed's relationship. Mm-hmm. So I've been... I feel like I am fucking Jesus Christ up in this shit, spreading the word of the gospel around, being like, no, you have to keep watching. It gets so good.
To be fair, I do that with a lot of shows. I am like halfway through season one of Only Murders in the Building, and I just never finish that either.
Michael.
Okay. That's like an actual mystery, too.
Yeah.
We won't talk. This is...
I do it a lot. That's why I watch movies. You sit down, you finish it. That's it.
So how do you feel about splitting movies into two?
Like, oh, I'm very against it.
Oh, really?
Would it kill you to know that I've currently only watched the first 40 minutes of Zodiac?
Jesus Christ.
I'm really itching to finish it, but I've decided to finish it with my friend on Halloween, so now I have to wait, and it's killing me.
Wait, so did you, like, also hate the Hobbit series, too? Because didn't they do four Hobbit films? Did I make that up?
Three.
No, they did
five.
No, but they're
five.
All...
Five?
No, three.
Should be just fucking with us.
But, no, because they're all separate films.
Oh, okay. Never mind. So, like, Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, are you like, no?
No, that's fine. They're separate films. Like, I don't mind if you have to break up a story over the course of several films. That's what they did with Lord of the Rings. I just, like, a film is 2 hours. How are you stopping halfway through? Like, I'm going to finish this some other day.
So do you mean, like, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1 and Part 2?
No, Kate. No, Kate, you're not struggling to understand this.
Truti asked me, how do you feel about splitting watching a movie into two?
Like,
so, like, if I started a film today and I was like, you know what, I'm going to pause it and finish this tomorrow.
Why did I struggle so much?
Holy shit.
Guys, I'm just so blinded by Ed and Steed's love for each other that I can't comprehend anything else outside of their relationship.
My God.
This show is my brain, and that is it. I don't have any room for anything else.
But in general, my thoughts about season two are that I think I liked it less than season one. Not much less, but slightly less. Just because, like, season one, I think, was a bit simpler, right? We're getting to know Steed and the gang, and it reaches a very nice conclusion / cliffhanger with him and Ed / Blackbeard, whatever you want to call him. And, you know, season two, for me, it just felt like there was a lot going on, and it was, like, a bit all over the place. Mainly because we're introducing a lot of new characters. We're jumping locations. And it's just, like, it's almost like there's, like, this chase the whole time between them. And I do like how the season ultimately concludes. That, I think, was pleasing. And, you know, whether or not there is a season three, I think the ending works regardless. But I don't know, just it just lacked something for me. Like, I wasn't as attached to these characters, particularly some of the new characters that were introduced.
Who did you not like?
Hold on. It's not that it's not that I didn't like them.
Oh no.
It's that I didn't feel an attachment per se. Right. So for instance, I liked Auntie because and I feel like pretty sure she's been in other Taika Waititi stuff. So she seemed familiar to me. I didn't love Zhang. She's not my
favorite. Oh, my God. Mike, this is the most wrong you've ever been on the podcast. Yeah. How does it feel?
I mean, I thought she was funny, but I don't know. Just like her.
This is more wrong than some of the theories you posited on Lost.
Yeah. Well, hey, those could still be right. We don't know.
That's true. You don't know. I don't love the other
the English guy with his nose cut off either. I can't remember.
I don't care about him.
He was a very weak villain.
Yeah.
But the actress, Rubio Chan, I think is how you pronounce her name, who plays the pirate queen, I think is my favorite introduction of a character I very often hear people like on podcast. I listen to so many film and TV podcasts, and they're always like, "Oh, they're so magnetic when they're on screen. You just love them." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, that actor's charismatic. I get it. Whatever." I don't think I ever really understood what people mean when they're like, "You're drawn to this character whenever they're on screen," until I've seen this actor. Like, I don't know what it is about her. She has this charisma and comedy and suaveness, and I really think she's brilliant. I've looked at her IMDb. She's played like so many smaller roles. I want her to pop off now because I am obsessed with her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. When she was talking to Steed and she was like, "Girl, how are you doing?"
Yeah. No, I liked her as an actress.
Yeah.
It's more so just like how the character fit in the story I wasn't wild about. But I think you made a great point. Like, her introduction is awesome. Like, at the soup stand, was hysterical, and then like the big reveal, like when she comes and buys the indigo, like she had a very hot start, right? It was more so from that point on I wasn't wild about, especially you know, like her, I guess, like semi romance with Aluwande. Just because I really, really liked him and Jim. I was a big fan. Big fan. And now Jim has moved on as well. Jim has moved on as well, and I'm not happy about it.
Listen, I'll say this. I agree with Mike in a lot of ways. I did enjoy season one more than season two. And I think what it boils down to at the end of the day, it's not that, like, I don't like these characters. I think they had a lot of great intentions with these characters in season two, and I think they have a lot of heart. It just boils down to pacing. The pacing was off this season, and this was an 8-episode season when it obviously should have been a 10-episode season. And on top of that, yes, it's a comedy, so yes, they're getting half-hour episodes, but they're trying to do so much more than what a usual sitcom does. And I think this show is one of those shows that could have benefited from longer episodes. And the fact that they not only didn't get longer episodes, but they got cut down to 8 episodes... that's like 60 minutes of time that they could have spent, I think, like, these characters just having meaningful conversations, which they did in the first season, which I thought was lacking this season. I don't think that they were having those, like, discussions anymore with each other that made me, like, fall in love with them in the first,
like,
season.
Half of season one, they're just, like, chilling on the boat. Hanging out,
and they're talking,
having fun, saying shit. And like this, they're just like rushing from one place to the next.
Go, go, go. Yeah. And then you've got, like, again, I like all the actors on this show. Like, I also like Archie. It's the new woman that Blackbeard had hired and then has this thing with Jim. Like, again, I think her actor is great. I think she's really fun. But I think there wasn't enough time to, like, fully integrate her into the crew and also integrate her in relation to, to Jim.
Yeah.
So for them to suddenly be like, "Ha ha, we're cutting off Izzy's leg. Ha ha, now we're making out." And I'm like, whoa, when did this happen? You know? So when you talk about, like, the Zhang, Alu, Archie, Jim thing going on, like, I also am very much liked Alu and Jim because they had build up and they were already friends. And then, like, he was helping them with their personal problems back home in St. Augustine.
And he met Jim's grandma.
Yeah, and it was just like a natural progression of them finally getting together. And one of the things I was so most excited for in the year-long wait between seasons was, oh my god, Alu is stranded on an island. Jim is stranded on Blackbeard's ship. They probably both think the other one is dead. That's crazy. And I'm like, I was waiting for that, like, passionate reunion, and it just, like, really didn't happen.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, to play devil's advocate, it does make sense for them, I guess, to move on.
That's just also true.
Because, like, if we're working on, you know, reuniting them and, you know, we're having another reunion with Lucius and Black Pete, and then we're having a reunion between Steed and Ed, like, I guess it could, in a sense, become a bit repetitive as well, right? To really play out that romantic reunion over and over and over again over the course of the season.
That's a good point. We also got a note in from our listener and friend Jules, who actually was going to come on this podcast, but was unfortunately traveling this weekend. But she wrote this in about Olu and Jim's relationship. It says, I love Jim and Olu together, so I was a little apprehensive when other love interests were introduced in the first few episodes, but I also found it thrilling. I can see developing potential for polyamorous relationships here, and I'm very hopeful this show will actually go there, since it's a part of my queer experience and many others that rarely gets any representation. Plus, it would be fun to see Vigo Ortiz, fire emoji, make out with everyone in their hot, pansexual, polyamorous self via Jim. I'm also hopeful the series will show Olu exploring for himself and coming out of his sexual shell, another relatable experience. Sexual shell is a little hard to say. But I totally love that. And I love this poly view. Like, I think that would be a relief, especially if you're on a pirate ship. Are you kidding me? Vico Ortiz.
I would like for them to go in that direction. And I thought that's what they were doing. Like, halfway through season two, I was like, oh, I think, like, Archie and Olu and Jim are going to be poly.
Oh, I should say also, Jules is only on episode four, so.
Okay. Mm. Oops. Sorry.
I mean, she won't listen to this until she finishes. Okay, don't listen to Jules. I just meant, like, when she said that, like, hasn't seen the whole season play out yet.
I hope Jules isn't disappointed. Because clearly at the end of the season, though, it's like, no, it's like Jim and Archie and Jang and Olu. So it's definitely, it doesn't seem like it's going in like a poly direction. Mm-hmm. I did find this quote from David Jenkins. This was when he did an interview with Games Radar Plus. Never heard of them before this. And he said about kind of this romantic subplot. That relationship always felt like a friendship that got romantic. And it's fun to play with that. He's talking about Jim and Olu. If you do have romantic feelings for a friend and they meet somebody, you're happy for them because they're happy. But then you're also a little bit like, that's mine. They're mine. So the push and pull, that is sweet. I don't know if that was awkward. A lot of times you see that it's about the drama of jealousy. And I like the idea that actually they're happy for each other. They just want to see the other person be happy and healthy. And I don't think you see that a lot on television. They usually play more to the angst and the negative drama of it. So,
which, fair, but also I think I would be jealous.
Yeah. And I'm also like a slut for angst. I'm like, whoa, I want to see them jealous. Give me it. But, you know.
It's one of the fan fiction tropes they won't serve you on the show.
Yeah, but you know what? I will find fanfics about this, though. Trust me. So, yeah, I got a little bit into the pacing of this season. Like, again, I love this show, and I still love this season. And I still love, like, what the show stands for and what they're trying to accomplish. It's very rare on television to see, like, this kind of rom-com. So I love it. I do. The pacing was not great, but I want to, without knowing what actually happened, I do want to just blame Warner Brothers. And, like, I trust the writers and I trust David Jenkins. And I'm like, yeah, I bet that they really would have loved to have a 10-episode season. But obviously, they got a smaller budget for this season as opposed to last season. And I think more of their budget had to actually go to filming in New Zealand as opposed to LA. So they were, like, traveling. And in the show, in season two, the show aesthetically is very beautiful. Like, a lot better than season one, which like, mostly on sound stages. Like, that scene of, like, the very first episode is Steed throwing the bottle into the ocean, and he's, like, on the cliff. Like, gorgeous. I love it.
So, Kate, I don't know the answer to this, so I'm asking you. Maybe you will. Do you know the reasons behind them switching to New Zealand for filming?
I mean,
I know Taika Waititi's from there. He films there a lot, but...
Yeah, self-explanatory. Taika's from there. Rhys Darby, who plays Steed, is also a New Zealand actor. Mm-hmm. So, I think there was already some interest in maybe going there. I think it was just they could find better locations. And maybe in this season, as we see, they're traveling around more. So maybe they were like, we could benefit from, you know, a place. Like, New Zealand is very, like, I was watching some kind of, like, behind-the-scenes interview that they did when they were filming. And I forget who said it. I can't remember if it was Taika or David. But they said, you know, like, you go 2 miles over here and you have jagged coastal cliffs. And then you go 2 more miles over here and you have, like, this, like, flat field of, like, flowers. And, like, New Zealand's very diverse with its, like, just geography. That's why so many things want to film there. You know, like, that's why Lord of the Rings filmed there.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure if there was, like, a real definitive reason why they would switch, you know, locations. Mm-hmm. Not like, you know, they've been filming there from the start, but, yeah. Given their ties, it certainly makes sense.
Yeah, I think it was a nice change. But, yeah, it was just they could have benefited from 10 episodes to 60 more minutes, and I think the pacing would have been really good.
Who are you kidding, Kate? You wanted this to be, like, classic 22 episode season, hour long.
I would have watched it.
Would you want hour long episodes though? The Ted Lassification of Our Flag Means Death.
Oh yeah, God, I would watch hour long episodes of the show. Are you kidding?
I would rather watch double half hour episodes than.
I think I'm okay with the half hour episodes. I think that the finale should have been a two parter.
The finale did feel really fast.
Yeah,
they went from I look at it like bang, this. Bang, bang. Now everyone's free, and it's like, oh, okay.
I look at it as like, I think the first, like 5 episodes were really strong. Like that whole, like I like that little 3 episode mini arc of this is just Steed trying to find Ed, mm-hmm. and then they finally reunite. I really liked that. I then also liked. I think my favorite episode in the season was actually when they visit those two women who live together in, like, that shop who mm-hmm. Ed used to sail with.
And then they burn it down. And they're, like, these...
yeah, and they're, like, these older, like, jaded lovers. And I think it's, like... I like that episode was a lot of Ed and Steed, you know, talking about what had happened at the end of season one, but then also being, like, shit... We gotta figure our shit out because we don't want to end up like them, like trying to stab each other, you know, with like forks and stuff.
But also, so, how great is Minnie Driver?
Oh, I love her. I was like, oh my God, is that when I was watching? And then I looked it up and I realized it was Minnie Driver. And I loved that. I loved like the conversations that happened in that episode where, you know, Ed finds out that Steed went back to Mary, so then he throws the chair against the wall, and then he hides under his blanket, and he's like, I don't want to talk to you, and then Steed is like, I love everything about you. I love being near you, the sound of your voice. And then I just felt like, and then there was some more talking between them the next episode where they were like, we're whim prone, we need to like slow down if we want to make this work. And then I just feel like in the last couple of episodes, all talking between them just kind of went out the window. And my big problem was like in episode 7, you just have Ed kind of being like, no, last night was a mistake. I'm a fisherman now. I fish. And he just leaves. And Steed's like, what are you doing? And they should have a discussion, you'd think, the next episode about how Steed wants to be a pirate, but Ed wants to settle down and retire. And they're at two different points in their lives. And how do they navigate that as a couple? And instead, when they reunite, which I love, by the way, I love when they run to each other on the beach and then they kiss and it's so sweet. But then
after Steve just committed murder.
Yeah, Steve did just like shoot a guy before that. But then all they say is Blackbeard goes, I'm sorry, I was such a dick. And Steve goes, life's a dick. And then they make out again. And then they go, I love you. I love you. And he goes, I know. And I'm like, okay, as much as I love them, like, kissing each other and, like, and, like, saying they love each other, that is not a conversation to solve what had just happened the episode before, where, like, Ed left Steed to be like, you were a mistake, I'm a fisherman now. Like, no, they didn't really talk about what happened. So that's why I think the finale was, like, probably my least favorite episode. Wow. Maybe no. Maybe episode 7 was, actually. And I think they could have benefited from talking things out a little more. But they didn't have the time physically in the show to, like, really do that, you know? So I'm, like, 50-50 on it. On one hand, I'm like, I wanted more discussion. But on the other hand, I'm like, well, I think this is pretty good for, like, the time constraints that they did have.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I thought it was really interesting, you know, where we have this sort of prolonged arc of particularly Ed really, you know, sulking about the failed relationship at that point and being mm-hmm. just, like, absolutely horrible to the crew, you know. But I feel yeah. like that's not something you see all the time in television shows. It's just, like, the sort of post-breakup down in the dumps type of character, at least not for a prolonged period of time, right? I feel like normally TVs and film, it tends to be something that's moved on from pretty quickly. And another, I think one of the things that worked best about this season, despite some of the pacing issues, was just like this idea of these two people who clearly have very mutual feelings just mm-hmm. being like one step apart the whole way, right? Like they're having different feelings at different times. And it's like, to the viewer, it's like so obvious. It's like, just like get over it. Like just, get together.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's just a matter of poor time, really. But it's like, you just need to say things out loud to each other and figure it out. And I think that worked.
And I think like, that's what's so funny about then, like, fandom. Because I think, like, the fandom of this show kind of knows, like, okay, at the end of the day, this is a TV show. And we're not going to have, like, these really long, drawn-out conversations about our deep, dark feelings for each other. Like, we kind of have to infer a lot of stuff. And that's why it's so funny to, like, watch this show and then go and, like, read fics about it. Because people will, like, dump 10,000 words into, like, Ed and Steve talking about their feelings for each other. And it's like, oh, this is nice. But also, like, you have to remember, they're different mediums, you know.
You big fan of the Our Flag Means Death fanfic?
I've read some really good ones. I read one that was, like, written after season one, and it was like, this is what I think season two will be, and it was like 100,000 words, and I was like, I'm here for it.
My God.
Oh, yeah. It was like basically a novel. I read a novel about them.
Did you like it better than season two?
I liked it in different ways.
Yeah. It's a different medium.
Because it's a different medium. I read what is essentially a novel about them, but then this was like the show that I fell in love with, you know? So what did you guys think about the ending, about them starting an inn together? I kind of figured that was either going to eventually happen, either at the end of season two or if we get a season three, the end of season three, because you have this repeated history of Ed being like, maybe I'll start a restaurant, which, by the way, that restaurant, Blackbeard's Bar and Grill, Shruti, for my birthday, got me a shirt that says Blackbeard's Bar and Grill on it.
And fishing supplies. And fishing equipment, or whatever fishing, it is. The whole thing.
Yeah. It was so cute. So he has, like, these, you can see this repeated thing of Ed being like, I don't want to be a pirate anymore. I think I want to be a small business owner. Maybe I'll run a restaurant, or a gift shop, or an inn. And then this season, it's like, he's going full throttle on, I wanna run an inn called Jeff's Inn, even though my name's not Jeff. And I'm curious what you guys thought about, like, the ending of them. You know, you see the ship getting ready to leave, and then you finally don't see them on the ship, and you realize they're waving goodbye to the crew.
Yeah, I personally like the ending. Like I said earlier, I think it works either way, whether there is or isn't a season three, mm-hmm. because obviously if there isn't a season three, I think, you know, you can just either assume that they lived happily ever after, or it's just an ambiguous, like, does it work out for them? We don't know, but, like, that's the beauty of it, kind of thing. And then obviously if they do come back for season three, it leaves the door open, you know, just to sort of endless possibilities of where these characters can now go from here. That being said, I think season three might have to tread some I don't want to say dangerous ground, but I don't think, you know, on the face of it, of like those two staying behind, the rest of the crew off mm-hmm. on the ship, like just on the face of it, what they're portraying it to be, I don't think season three could work if they're sort of these two separate groups. I think they almost have to create some kind of device to get them to interact again, because
I think if there is a season three, they're not going to be in that inn for very long. Like, I think they'll get them. I feel like what I've heard, and Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably have better info than me, is that they have mm-hmm. a 3-season arc planned. And so I have a feeling that involves them leaving the inn pretty early, but also I really do not have much faith in the Zaslav verse, and so I don't think we're going to get a season three. Like, everything is being cut right now, and everyone is blaming the strikes to cut more and more shows, and so I do think that this is, like, as happy as I could be with an ending, and for that reason, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Because, like, here's the thing. Season one, the end of season one, I think those creators were just like, we really want a season two, and we're going like balls to the walls. And if we don't get a season two, then that will suck. But at least we told like the story we wanted to tell. And they got the season two, which was great, because if they had not gotten renewed and it was just Ed going fucking mental and pushing Lucius off a boat and then being like, I hate you, Steed Bonnet, I would like lost my fucking mind. Okay. Oh my god.
Kate would have single-handedly funded the season two of the show.
And by the way, oh my god, like that show came out and then like it wasn't until months later where Warner Brothers finally renewed it on June 1st because of Pride Month. Like, we waited until June 1st to be like, surprise, you get another season. Everyone was like, fuck you, HBO. Jesus. But then they were like, thanks, though, for renewing them. David Jenkins has said that he wants this to be 3 seasons. I also could sense that maybe they were a little more uncertain about if a renewal was happening for season 3, because they kind of just left it in a place where, like, it wasn't, like, the most satisfying it could be, but it was still, like, a good ending for them. And if they had, like, left it on another cliffhanger and then didn't get renewed, that would have sucked. So I think they were being hesitant and they were like, you know what? Let's kind of leave this a little like on a good note and you have hope for their future instead of you don't know what the fuck is going on. David Jenkins did do an interview with Paste and they said, Our Flag Means Death doesn't have a 3rd season pickup yet, so it's a difficult feat for writers to thread the needle in a finale that gives audiences closure, but also leaves enough story to continue. And Jenkins said to that, I don't think it was very hard. It was a very hard thing to do. I think it was more that I felt a responsibility to leave Ed and Steed in a good place, at least for now. It's not going to go well. They're not going to run a business well. Ed's too much of a talker. Steed can't focus. It's going to be challenging. Mm-hmm. And then Pace said, so you have more stories to tell? And I love this quote from Jenkins. He got a little cheeky and he said, for a 3rd season, I have a clear idea of the way through. So it will be good, big, interesting, but not too big, Max. He also said about Steve and Ed's relationship moving into season 3 in a interview with Vulture. He said, on some level, they have to grapple with the who's afraid of Virginia Woolf thing. Do we become Bonnie and Mary Read? How are we going to evolve as a couple who have decided to stay together? Are we cut out for that work or is it too scary? We're both people who are very damaged. One has real rage issues and the other runs from things. So how will we make that work? It's great to tell a love story that turns into the understanding that love is work. You work for your partner and hopefully they work for you every day and you find your way through it together. So I think he's hinting at like, I could very funnily, like, that's not a word. I could see a very funny episode 1, season 3, where it's just like, they are running the inn so poorly. And they are like, why the fuck did we decide to run an inn? And they're at their wits' end of each other. They're kind of jaded. And then for some reason, the revenge comes sailing back to the coast being like, hey guys, we kind of need you. And they're like, we should take a break from the inn. And then they go sail for a little bit again.
Yeah. Well, not why. And that has to, in some respect, happen. Because, yeah, like, you know, our direct comparison in terms of, like, having a character who runs an inn is Spanish Jackie, who is wonderful.
He's now on the ship, though.
I know, no, but I'm saying through the first two seasons, right? Spanish Jackie running her bar, whatever. Leslie Jones is amazing. Honestly, one of my favorite characters. But yeah. It works so well because it's sort of this thing that they can come back to and from. It's like not the centerpiece of the show, and she's a side character. Like, you can't take the centerpiece of the show and stick it into that situation, and they can't become the thing that's on the side. But also what the crew is doing on the Revenge is also so paramount to the show. So that's why, like, you can't have these two separate things for an extended period. So I think that does work well. Like you said, first episode, the end is just a shit show, and somehow they make their way back to it. Like, you need interaction and crossing paths to some extent between these characters.
I would find it so funny if, like, yeah, like, they pick up Ed and Steed and they're back on the ship and they're trying to hunt down this, the villain with the, you know, his nose is cut off. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember his name. That's how
stupid he is.
But I would love it if they're just like, yeah, we had some trouble, like, running the inn. Like, Spanish Jackie, sweet. Do you guys have any, like, tips on how to run an inn as a married couple or, like, a bar as a married couple? And then they get tips on how to run a small business. Also, mentioning, I think the funniest sub storyline on the season, just mentioning the Swede, was Spanish Jackie being like, hey, yo, the Swede's kind of hot. You're my new husband now. And then when she poisons everybody, and he's like, wait, did I get poisoned? She goes, no, you're poison trained. You're poisoned immune. He goes, I am. Which means that she's been somehow feeding all her husband's poison to make sure that they don't get poisoned in the future. It's so fucking funny.
It's pretty impressive. Baller move.
Should we talk about Izzy?
Yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Rip Izzy hands. So yeah, spoilers. Izzy dies in the season finale after going through quite a bit of maiming and losing a leg and getting stabbed this season. He then ultimately does die in the finale. He gets shot when they're trying to escape the Republic of Pirates. What were your guys' thoughts on Izzy's death? Which is, I think, is like the only real actual important character death we've had on this show yet.
Yeah, definitely. As much as I hate to see him go, because I you know, think he was a great character, and I really like that actor. He was also in Chernobyl. Very different.
He was such a despicable character in Chernobyl, Mike, that when I started,
I know, but he's so good.
But when I, and obviously he's like kind of a villain in season one, so I just hated him. Like, all of season one, I was like, Kate, you don't understand how terrible this guy is in Chernobyl. And she was like, okay, but we're not watching Chernobyl. Yeah.
But you can't, but you can't, like, if you've seen Chernobyl, like, you also can't unsee it. His voice really
is so good, though. Oh my god.
Yeah, except when he's like yelling at a bunch of people who are dying of fucking
radiation poisoning.
But
Kate, you should watch Chernobyl.
Yeah, Kate would love Chernobyl.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure I would like it. I love radiation poisoning.
Yeah, Chernobyl's disgusting. But it's wonderful. It's really great. Kate, I don't even think you could keep your eyes on it. But
alrighty. Noted.
I digress. As much as I hate to see him go, because I do think he was a great character, I thought having him be the meaningful death was very befitting, because I would argue he goes through the best sort of character arc of anybody on the show, really. Like, as Shruti just mentioned, he was also horrible in season one. In the way, you know, that he sort of really wins over the crew and is sort of like this buffer between them and Blackbeard when he's just completely off the deep end. Mm-hmm. And then the way that he's also sort of able to mend that relationship with Ed, and also with Steed,
because, too,
like, you know, there's that, I can't remember what they say, but I do love the scene where Steed tells him, like, I beat you in a duel before, you know, on a technicality. I just
you
think
twat.
he really shines through on several different layers throughout the show, and I do think I'm fine with his storyline coming to an end. It served a great purpose, and yeah, I thought it was good.
I would say it really started to feel like he was on a redemption arc, to the point when he made that speech at the end about like how pirates are about belonging, something great speech, but I was like, oh, he's dying. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Also, quick side note, yeah. I loved when he sang. I thought that was great.
Oh my god, in drag, and,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
That whole episode was magnificent. Yeah, I liked how far he came to. Because when you think about it, it's like in season one, he stabbed Steed through the stomach. Whoops. He sold them out to the English. What else did he do? And then in season two, he helped kill Ed, kill in quotes, because he didn't really, but you know, he thought he killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was really beautiful for him to be like, to see when Steed and Ed were reunited, and after being under Ed's reign, where Ed was, you know, essentially heartbroken and mm-hmm. being like the worst part of it, like his worst, the worst version of himself. It was nice to finally be like, oh. They make each other better. I should have realized that sooner, but I was so captivated with like his pirate reputation that I wasn't really looking at like the actual person underneath. So I really like how far he came. I will say, if you guys are not chronically online like me, the fandom is very divided over Izzy's death. You have one half who are like, yeah, like it makes sense, and it was a good arc, and I think his death was like coming, and he got to kind of say what he wanted to say to Ed before he died, and like I think Ed is now a better person after having had Izzy in his life, and now appreciates what he had more, you know. But you do have half the fandom who is like kind of pissed
because they love him.
I think the fandom,
yeah.
What'd you say?
Like
they're pissed because
they
love him.
Yeah, they just didn't
want
to see him die.
Because he died.
Yeah.
Well, like. There's some arguments, like, listen, I think there's, like, arguments on both sides that I get about, like, him dying. Some people are mad about, I think they were kind of bummed that, well, he went through this giant redemption arc only to die. Like, that's really sad.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, like, thought that they were kind of prepping him to be, like, the next captain of the Revenge, because now he had finally, like, earned the crew's trust, and they called him the Unicorn. And he seemed really moved by that, and he finally felt like maybe he had found his place with this crew. And so it was very sad that he kind of, like, you know, kicked the bucket. And then people were sad, too, about, like, I think there were some fans that kind of saw him, like, essentially become a disabled character this
yeah.
season, because he lost a leg. And then they were like, wow, he's, like, this disabled character, but he kept going. He's really strong. And some fans were like, well, I'm disabled, and I really relate to him. And then to see him kind of just get killed off in the end, which was in a rushed way. Like, the finale was very rushed.
Yeah, I will. Yeah,
they
I
felt
will
kind of
agree with that.
Robbed, you know. So it's been kind of decisive to the point that David Jenkins did tweet and said, there's no version of this show that doesn't include Izzy Hands. That's what he tweeted.
Oh,
and
interesting.
He
is he
going to
come back as a ghost?
Yeah, like, what does
that
mean?
He did have to turn off, like, he had to do, like, only people who follow him can reply. And there are 1,100 quote tweets. But a lot of them are actually like, we love you. But then, obviously,
yeah.
there are some that are like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Like, you know. So I understand, like, people, the community of the show, like, very, very, like, love the show very much. And so there was some, I was reading some, like, mixed opinions on Izzy's death. My one conspiracy theory, though, is that it's this. I don't think they'll actually do this, but if Buttons can just fucking turn into a seagull, and then you see in the last shot, we think it's Buttons as a seagull landing on Izzy's grave. Is Buttons the sea witch gonna do some weird magic and is, like, Ed gonna just, or not Ed, is he gonna just, like, crawl out of his grave and be like, I'm good now, guys, like, what's up? I don't think he will, but people were being like, if Buttons can turn into a bird, then Izzy can come back to life.
Maybe he'll come back as a fish.
I saw this one tweet, and I can't, like, I don't know if I could find it again, but it was basically someone being like, this is how I would like the first opening scene of season 3, episode 1 to go. It's Ed and Steed, and they're fighting over running an inn, and then, like, I think, like, they said, oh, Ed's trying to, like, cook something, and it's burning, and Steed is like, you're burning the food, and then you just hear a voice behind them go, what the fuck is that smell? And then you turn around, and it's Izzy, and then they start screaming, and then he starts screaming, and then it cuts to the title card of Our Flag Means Death.
The Our Flag Means Death title drops are very creative and fun.
So fun, right? Like the breakfast in bed one.
Yeah.
I loved that. But yeah. So his death was a dividing thing in the fandom. Mostly I've seen people who are positive, though, about it. But there is like a... There are some people who are like, you know, didn't love it. And I understand. I think it was like a rush death. I think I would have been even more content with it if they had given it a little more time to breathe. But it was kind of jarring to be like, he's dead. Funeral.
Yeah.
Wedding. We own an inn. Goodbye.
It was a lot.
And, you know, like mentioning how Izzy's death felt kind of rushed, I think also with the whole pacing thing, which we've already talked about, I think the creators were also aware. David Jenkins did do an interview, this is again with Paste, where they asked him, in the breaking of the season, how much changed while plotting out the season to the finale? And he said, I wanted to start at the Republic of Pirates this season and end at the Republic of Pirates, and I knew I wanted the Republic of Pirates to be destroyed, ultimately. Within that, we are making a one-hour show on a half-hour budget, on a half-hour schedule. The questions then become, if we have a bar fight, and you have everyone fight, how big can we make it? And if we have everything blow up, how much can we blow it up? Or if we have a fight, how big of a fight and what parts of the fight can you actually show? It's about making something that felt like it had some heft and size to it. In the room, talking through it as a showrunner, I'm thinking, oh man, we're going to put these department heads through hell. They're going to have to work so hard. You already feel bad. So, like, he's obviously conscious of, like, the scale of this show.
He said we're making a one-hour show on a half-hour budget?
I think what he meant is this show
should be
kind
an
of
hour.
Has the scale
of a 1 hour.
Of a 1 hour, but it's not. They're getting a half hour for episodes. And
but it's just weird because if you wanted
it
to be a 1 hour show, why didn't you pitch a 1 hour show? Because
it's a comedy. I don't think they would have given them a 1 hour comedy at HBO Max. Max. It's not HBO. Who's HBO?
I don't know. It's just like I work in development. We're currently developing a half hour show. An outline for the show came in and we're like, this is an hour outline.
Yeah.
We can't, like, it's not an hour-long show. It's a half hour. It's a comedy. We need it to be snippier. We need it to, you know what I mean? And we're changing it to be, like, if you want your show to be an hour.
Yeah.
You should format it to be an hour.
I also, like, kind of feel like season one, half-hour episodes were fine because the show was a little more contained.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then season two, I think they just tried to add too many plot points and too much, like, action.
Yeah.
That then you were like, oh, fuck. Like, there's so many things that need to get resolved.
Yeah. Listen, I agree with you that, like, it's definitely network and studios that are, like, constricting the episode order from 10 to 8. However, if the writers are trying to make an hour show knowing they only have half an hour, that comes down to the writer. Like, you have half an hour. Reformat your season and arcs and, like, what you want to do to be a half hour. Because you know that's what you have. Like, don't then be upset that you only have half an hour. You knew that.
And there's little things in the writing, too, where I was like, this wasted time. Like, this thing that I'm watching didn't need to happen. Like, oh, I saw a great tweet that said they should have combined Ned Lowe, that villain who interrupts their party, their Calypso party, and then the guy with the nose cut off. They should have combined him to be
honestly, in my mind, they are one.
Yeah.
Like why did we have to introduce this, like, new character just to then he's gone in an episode? Like, why didn't we make... I think, like, Ned Lowe should have been, like, the big, big villain. And then, like, you had the guy who got his nose cut off. You had him make an appearance in episode one where he was like, you're so cool, Steed. Like, I'm a minor prince, but I want to be a pirate, yo. And then he gets kind of wronged by them, not even intentionally. Mm-hmm. He just gets left behind. And he's like, well, now I'm going to fucking destroy piracy.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, who are you? I think, like, it was a combination of limited airtime And they made some writing decisions that I was like, you could have tightened this up and served it better for things that were actually more important. So Shruti, I know you mentioned that in kind of this Zaflof world, we're scared for season three that it could probably not happen because, you know, we're in the strike environment. Things are getting cut, you know, kind of because of the strike, or at least that's what studios are saying it's for. But I am slightly hopeful for season three. And I know I saw in an interview that David Jenkins was hopeful as well for season three because... This show actually has very strong viewership. I read an article from The Wrap that used data from Parrot Analytics. It kind of showed like this graph, and then they kind of break down the graph too of how Our Flag Means Death is matching up to other Max original shows. So they compared it to Peacemaker and Love and Death. And they said... We can see that demand in the first 2 weeks of Love and Death and Our Flag Means Death, haha, both say death in it, whatever, followed a similar trajectory as both shows gradually inched toward 30 times the average series demand. But while Love and Death hit a ceiling below 30 demand, Our Flag Means Death continued to gain momentum in the following weeks. The delayed discovery of the show helped Our Flag Means Death hold audience attention well after its finale. Ultimately, demand for the show peaked at 40.8 times the average series demand 47 days after it premiered. Contrast this with Peacemaker, which had just premiered a few months earlier. The John Cena-led DC superhero series benefited from being part of one of the biggest franchises and had almost immediate success. The finale of Peacemaker peaked at over 45 times the average series demand, but audience interest in the show rapidly fell off after that point. The lesson here is that gradually building momentum as opposed to burning brightly and then rapidly falling off audiences' radars can benefit a show in the long run.
My comment is just, if you want to gradually build momentum, you know what helps? Releasing one episode a show a week.
Listen, I already made peace with that.
Peacemaker? Are you?
Peacemaker? Yeah, no, I agree. I would have loved to have watched one a week. But apparently not.
I do think a lot of people like binging this show. And so I understand why they're feeding it to them in this way. I just personally am not. I would rather just get one a week and savor it.
Yeah.
Me too.
For me, I love appointment viewing. But at the same time, like, it's very show dependent. Like, some shows I like waiting a week. Like Severance, for instance. Mm-hmm. Or The Great British Bake Off. Love it.
Interesting.
But other shows, like, I just want to binge and fly through, you know. I guess it depends on my level of interest.
Yeah.
This show, I would say I lean towards binge, personally.
I binged season one, like, a month after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a great time binging it. I do think this show is a good binge show, but it's just, like, there's a part of me, though, that constantly worries that in this landscape, if these studios and these streaming platforms just release something all at once, it's very hard for the show to gain momentum unless you kind of use like word of mouth. And it's very hard to like market when you just drop everything all at once. Like, you can't tease anything from week to week.
Yeah. If it was an hour long show, I would be on board with appointment viewing.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the end of the day, though, it's not like this show was marketed well at all, because you also have an ongoing writer's strike. So you have, like, some of the most important voices that you want to hear from, like Rhys Darby and Taika Waititi, absolutely can't talk about this show. So that really hurt, too, especially because this crew is such a colorful crew that loves the community so much. Like, I don't know if I told you this. Last summer, me and my mom went to go see Rhys Darby do stand-up in Boston.
Oh.
And the whole audience... You could tell we're Our Flag Means Death fans. His whole audience. And actually, the cutest thing was that a lot of people, like, during Rhys Darby's tour that summer, a lot of people were buying this, like, or like this Hawaiian shirt that had oranges on it from, like, Kohl's or something, or from Walmart. I don't know. And it was supposed to be like, haha, like the petrified orange that they find in season one.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we were there, obviously, like, Restorpy was like, if you're wearing the orange shirt, please stand up. And everyone was like, yay! And he was like, I love you guys. So, cute. Yeah. But it sucked to not be able to hear, like, what he thought or, like, what Taika thought about the season.
Well, especially, you know, too, with, like, Taika having a new movie coming out. Like, I feel like it could have benefited from that as well, you know, just like the general buzz around him, because I've started to, like, recently I've started to see trailers for that.
Oh my god, you guys don't know how much I was praying for this trick to be over before Our Flag Means Death came out. I was like, please.
They do have a great cast that I would love to watch promote it. But,
and then my last viewership thing I want to mention, which I think is the most fascinating thing, is they said, so far, the second season of Our Flag Means Death is exceeding the peak of demand for the show's first season and has averaged nearly 45 times the average series demand in its first 10 days. To put this into context, this is about 50% higher demand than the third season of The Righteous Gemstones, which premiered June 18th. It is also outpacing demand for the third season of Succession in 2021.
That's huge.
So people are watching it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm hopeful that Warner Brothers won't fucking mess this up and they will give them their season three, which is obviously what they want to conclude on. So they should just do that, okay? David Zaslav, are you listening? No, you're not. You don't listen to this podcast.
I don't know. I heard he's a huge fan, actually.
Oh, yeah. Cool. He should donate some of his very large salary to help support our podcast.
You should send him a letter.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that, you know, the scene where Taika gives knives to those two young kids?
Yeah.
Those are Taika's daughters.
I read that he brought his kids to set. It's so cute.
Benefit of shooting in New Zealand. Your kids are there if you're also from New Zealand.
I just love that.
It's what Peter Jackson did with Lord of the Rings.
He put his kids in it?
Yeah, they were Hobbit children.
He also put his kid Stephen Colbert in it as well.
Colbert is in Lord of the Rings?
No, he's in The Hobbit.
No, he's in The Hobbit. He plays like some random villager. Demande tous les jours et ça me fait quelque chose.
Well, fingers crossed for season three, but on that note, let's wrap things up on this episode of Chaos on the Set. Kate, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yes, everybody. If you want to scream over this show with me, and if you want to talk about how much we love Steed and Ed kissing on the beach, they're so fucking cute, I can't. You can follow me at Kate_Wyatt and scream with me in my DMs. I also have a letterbox, but I was not allowed to share it. Michael said if I shared it, he would Neil Hall me, which, if you don't know what that is, I'll let you guys. It's when they take someone and tie them to the side of the ship and then run them under the ship.
Oh, God.
Until it kills them. I just thought you'd like a pirate term.
Yeah, no, hey, I appreciate it. I was waiting for that because it's been a while since we've had a good one. So
I only know what it is because Shruti told me about how it happens on Black Sails, which is Shruti's favorite pirate show.
That is. Black Sails is an impeccable show, but Kate can't
watch
violent.
It. Too violent. Too violent for me. I'll keep watching my silly rom-com one instead.
You can follow me on Letterboxd at mricardi. And, you know, I'm gonna plug my Twitter today because I looked at my profile the other day and for some reason I'm losing followers. I don't know if people just don't like what I have to say, or maybe there are some bots that have had their accounts deleted, but I need more followers. So you can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Riccardi. Send that follower request, and if you're cool enough, I'll approve it.
Wow.
You can follow me on Twitter at MicroMarate. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Shruti Marate. But I think I'm going to change my Letterboxd username to MicroMarate. I don't like that it's my full name. But I apparently have to email in to get your username changed. So
that's stupid.
Until then. Or I can upgrade to Pro and then I can change it on my own. Tweet me at MicroMarate. Let me know if I should do the email route or the Pro route.
Get Pro. Pro is awesome.
I really do think I want Pro. But my friends were like, no, just send an email.
No, Pro is awesome. I liked Pro so much, I went patron. I took it one step higher.
Wait, what do you get from patron?
Truthfully, I don't know. I can't remember.
You just love it so much. You offer to pay more for you don't know what.
Well, because I can just do everything. I can't remember what the differences are.
Oh, got it.
But I like to support Letterboxd. It's my favorite app.
It is my favorite social media, second favorite app after the AMC app, but the UI sucks. Like, come on. Anyway.
Well, they just got bought by a new company, so maybe.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Nothing is ever good when you get bought. Anyway, You can follow the show on Letterboxd. We're also on Chaos on the Set on Letterboxd. We're also on Twitter and Instagram, and you can shoot us an email, chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com. Can't wait to hear from you.